past the creaky metal gates, through the fog-enveloped graveyard, you find yourself on the rickety old porch of a long-forgotten home. Beyond the threshold sits a man, obsessed, a tortured soul, cursed to discover all about the Southern California haunt community and beyond. You have now entered the domain of The Creepcast with Rick Creeper.
Here we go. All right, we're back at it. Episode 8 of The Creepcast with your host, Rick Creeper 11. Today, I have a very special guest, a man named Michael Santana, the creative designer behind 2S Horrorcore's podcast, director, film editor, and filmmaker behind Manhattan Movies. I became acquainted with this man about a year ago, and we became good friends, and I've been on his podcast way too much. You got to get some other guests besides me. I'm getting boring. And we worked on a couple projects not too long ago, and just besides that, we just became very good friends. So how we doing, sir?
Oh, good, man. Just shout out, Scaredy Cat.
Coffee, man. I see you. I see you drinking coffee from a coffee mug, Scaredy Cat Vasquez merchandise. So
yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thanks for having me, sir. I appreciate that.
I've been wanting to have you on for a while. Just we finally, I think, sat down and kind of figured things out. And, you know, with the current lockdown situation, I mean, we're doing the best we can. And just we came up with a solution. I'd rather have you in studio, but this way, at least we're doing it, you know, via Zoom. And we're able to communicate, you know, over the internet and still have some image, you know, some kind of interaction with the video. So obviously, this is an audio podcast. So how are you holding up lately?
I'm all right, man. Just maintaining, just like the next man. Doing what he has to do, going to work and bills and life and all that good stuff.
Right. You know, it's fun being an adult sometimes, though.
Sometimes.
For those who don't know, Michael Santana has the 2S Horrorcore's podcast, which can be found on various platforms. Also, you can view the video podcast on YouTube. And Manhattan Films, which is, he's pretty much the driving force behind the entire entity of films and movies. I mean, you do your own editing.
Yes.
You pretty much come up with a concept. You wrote scripts. Yes. You have various short films. Remind me again where we can find these short films and movies.
Well, YouTube is kind of the go-to, but I have all of my stuff on Vimeo as well, which is a better compression site for your videos. You know, it doesn't necessarily compress them as much, so they allow you to upload larger files.
Okay.
So, Vimeo, that's the second one, you know.
So what I like to do for everybody is I'll put links in the description where they can find you on Instagram, YouTube, and what was it again, the platform you're on?
Vimeo.
For
Vimeo. Okay. Yeah.
We'll have that as well. You have the coolest setup in your studio for the video podcast.
Thank you.
You obviously you're a buff of movie, not only horror movies, but the whole genre of just cinema as well. I mean, the one thing we have in common is infatuation with the boogeyman, that, you know, Michael Myers.
Yes, indeed. Yep. Love me some Michael Myers, you know. certain versions of him. You know?
Yeah, that's another rabbit hole we went down last.
Right.
It's funny because we had a discussion about the 78 mask from Trick or Treat Studios.
Right.
I'm actually going to send mine out for cinematic touch-ups.
Okay.
So it's a mask maker that I came across on Instagram that he actually sculpts and makes his own masks, but also he provides the more lifelike and cinematic look of the mask. So
like rehaul, that's cool.
Pretty much a rehaul. Yeah, there you go. So you know, he's like, hey, this is what I do. This is how much I charge, and this is the one I like to wear. The cosplay. Normally, I'd wear the Halloween 2 mask. It's a little tight for my giant head, but the 78 mask, it fits like a glove. I'm not necessarily the hugest fan of the way it looks.
Yeah.
As far as details, it looks great on me in certain angles when I cosplay. It fits like a glove. I just want a little more depth on you know, definition on the cheekbones and whatnot. So.
Okay.
So let's talk about the podcast and.
Yeah.
Where did you start with that? I mean, just, with me, I think you were some of my inspiration behind wanting to do a podcast when I was a guest on there various times. But what what was it that Michael Santana did or just took the plunge to start an actual like horror podcast, horror based cinema podcast?
Well, I had this collection behind me for years. Now, the actual case itself, I've only had maybe for 3 years. But as far as the collection over the years of masks and toys, I was able to get this case and I put it together, you know, as far as, making it look how it looks. And I thought, well, when I'm not editing or shooting another project, what can I do to keep the creative juices flowing? You know what I mean? You know, what can I do? I kind of want it to be different. You know, I don't want to just kind of dive in without researching and trying to see what I can do. And I'm like, why not use what I have here and let's talk horror, you know, and I can run video as well as audio and bring in, guests such as yourself that kind of bless the episode because I'm not much of a talker. So I enjoy having, you know, cats come in here and talk horror, you know, from the filmmaking aspect to the mazes that you work, to editing, to actors, you know, everything horror related, you know. So I enjoy that.
What inspired you? Was it other various podcasts or you just said, I'm just going to do it?
I was inspired by listening to other podcasts, correct? Yeah, I was like, okay, I like what some of these guys are doing, what they're talking about. I can do it here at the house. That's the main thing. I can do it here. Mm-hmm. And I can put my own touch on it, you know. So, yeah, definitely, I feel you got to be inspired. So, I have to be inspired to do anything, you know.
Was Manhattan Movies already in progress prior to the podcast?
Manhattan Movies, I came up with that, I think, in 08. Manhattan, okay. I was born in Manhattan. I grew up out here, you know, but my parents moved me out here when I was like 3 and they were born and raised. Mm-hmm. But Manhattan is what the Lenape, I may have pronounced that wrong, the Native Americans, when they rolled up onto the island, you know, way back when, Lenape language, the Manhattan means the island of rolling hills, you know. Mm-hmm. At the time, obviously, there was no buildings, and it is an island, you know, and that's just was their term for it, you know, and then hence it got turned, you know, into Manhattan. And that's where it derives from. And I thought Manhattan would be kind of cool.
I had inklings when we met. You were an East Coast guy. Your family's from the East Coast.
Right.
And then I don't know why. I did a little research on the name Manhattan. And then what you just described, I learned. I'm like, oh, okay. Even though, you know, you moved here as, you know, you're 3. You pretty much grew up on the West Coast. You're obviously embedded and rooted. You have roots in the East Coast. Right. Yeah. So you were definitely inspired and just motivated with a love of cinema and horror, not just horror, but to different genres as well.
Yeah, different genres as well. I wanted to focus more on horror for this podcast, but a lot of times we kind of veer off and say, oh, that guy was in this movie. He was also in this movie, you know, so we veer off a little bit on it. So I think I'm up to 18 now. But
yeah, you're up there in double digits and just every episode has gotten better and better. Mic quality. Yeah. I love the way it's shot. I love the way your studio is lit up. And it's very, I was very impressive when I first got there. Oh, this is actually pretty cool. And then I see, you know, myself on camera and I'm in it just in a film. I'm like, it looks too crisp. It's just very impressive. So I said, to me, it's very inspirational when someone has a natural talent or just an eye for something. And you obviously have a passion for film and video. And then it transforms or transposes into you creating a video podcast and movies. You've done movies, you've done trailers, you've done music videos. Yeah. And we're going to talk about that. But to me, it just, it was a little intimidating when I got there and it was overwhelming, but we had this weird connection with a lot of things in common for a dude I never met before, you know?
Right. No, exactly. And a lot of this, I appreciate the compliments on this stuff, but let me be the first to tell you, this is all from effing up. You learn all this from messing up. You know, I didn't like that, so maybe this works. So you definitely got to learn, I think, each time. I think me and you have talked about that.
Exactly.
Every time you learn something, you know. So that's where it all comes from.
So you pretty much didn't have a background, let's say, just like in audio and video, like for example, the podcast, you just something you dived into and figured it was a work in progress pretty much.
Yeah, the podcast was, I was pretty in tune with sound already with some of my other projects. And I knew for podcasting, I wanted to make it sound good. Cause I think if something sounds good, but the picture's bad, you're more prone to listen to it. And if it's the other way around, if you got a crisp HD and the sound's messed up, you're more prone to turn it off. You know what I mean? So that's just my opinion, but I did research on podcast mics and did a lot of testing. And then, you know, got, I think three of them, you know, pretty cheap. And they work fine. You know, and I got a little sound mixer, the H6. I think you sent a picture of it the other day. And it works great.
That's one thing you expressed to me. It's focus on audio quality. When I, this is prior to me starting the podcast and, you know, we discussed it and you're very supportive about it. And you're like, focus on audio quality and you're going to make mistakes, which I have. The last episode, someone else might not notice it. I will. I noticed the compression and gain and certain things. And it, but again, I'm learning as I go. I mean, I listened to the first two episodes and they're cringy and I'm like, oh my God, this is horrible. But then you flash forward to number 6 and 7 and it, you see the improvement. And it's just a matter of, you know, learning through your mistakes. So you've had various guests, you've had actors, you've had directors, you've had Tony the Wizard, you know, hip hop background. And we talked about, I trip out on that. Just, you've had myself, you had Scaredy Cat Vasquez. It just, somehow you've tied it all into, you know, the same concept, something, you know, horror movies and some discussions from like Salem's Lot to Star Wars to Jaws, which technically is a horror movie. Sure. And it's just, you brought all these different aspects, different people from different avenues, but somehow there's a common interest, which just goes to show that it's just, even though, you might not be someone that's very spoken, but somehow you're able to bring all these people on the same platform that speaks loudly. So,
yeah. Exactly. So, and I think horror is subjective. Horror can be whatever you feel like it is. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be, in my opinion, Halloween or Evil Dead. I mean, like, to me, Taxi Driver is a horror movie, you know, part horror movie, and Jaws as well, you know, and it just depends. And that's what this podcast is all about kind of opening up to what other people think, you know, and their thoughts. So,
pretty good. We had a discussion about the first Alien movie being a pretty much a sci-fi horror because it's but it's in space. You're trapped in an environment where you can't escape and you're being stalked by an unknown force or entity.
Right.
And it's the whole concept of you know, playing cat and mouse. But instead of it being like a Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers, it's an alien. So
right, exactly.
Same with Jaws. It's you see inklings of a shark, but you don't necessarily, but they did that for certain reasons, obviously, you know why, because the quality of the shark wasn't the greatest, but somehow they were able to sell it with imagery or subtleties of this beast hunting everybody in this beach community. So
and that's my favorite movie, by the way, Jaws. I've showed you, I think I told you, I went to Martha's Vineyard and went to a few of the filming locations of Jaws. Just a historically very informative movie, man. Everything they went through and the horror of what they went through. And so that ranks number one for me.
So you obviously have a passion for film and video.
Yes.
And you've been inspired throughout the years. What are your earliest memories of far as movies? Like what movie kind of like, for me, it was anything that I probably experienced watching with my father or my grandfather. And it could have been anything from The Natural with, I forget the actor's name, Dustin Hoffman?
Robert Redford,
excuse me. Or something like House on Haunted Hill with Vincent Price. For you, what was it? It went from like an actual interest to a hobby to a passion.
I have memories of watching these movies with my dad, being afraid of Halloween, the original Halloween, Halloween 2 as well. We can get into that. Poltergeist, just memories of these movies as a kid. Exorcist, you know, they terrified me, but they're comforting in a sense too. So it's kind of hard to explain, but they did terrify me, you know, the Halloween theme, but I was still attracted to it.
Right? That's weird, huh?
Still go towards it, you know what I mean? So yeah, those are my memories. And, you know, me and my dad, we would watch those and, you know, he never, he didn't, you know, tell me to cover my eyes and things like that. The way he raised me was just to know right from wrong. No, don't go do that shit. You know what I mean? You know, it's a movie, you know? So I think he did a good job.
So definitely, you definitely had an interest in film and cinema at an early age. And was it more the type of films that you were exposed to? Was it, like for me, what I'm trying to get at is it, did you notice just like certain camera angles or the lighting or the way the movies were shot? And this possibly developed, you know, Michael Santana, the filmmaker, the videographer later on down the road.
No, that the shot angles and how they shot it developed later on.
Okay.
In my 20s, you know. But like I said, for horror movies themselves, just the feeling of being, the feeling of that fear inspired me a little bit, you know. But as far as the camera angles and stuff, probably in my 20s, early 20s, maybe even at 19, 20, I started to make, you know, wanted to make movies and things.
I can relate because I didn't necessarily pay attention to, excuse me, directors or like filmmakers. It was more the individual movies. And I noticed I started gravitating to certain genres or even certain films made by certain people.
Like, okay. For example,
we have a common interest in John Carpenter.
Right.
When I was a kid, I had no clue, you know, you'd see his name in the credits. And I literally was watching, you know, John Carpenter's Halloween, the first and second, the third, then The Thing, then The Fog, They Live, and so forth. And then I'm realizing later on at an early age, I'm like, I've been captivated by this man's films for some reason. And it was a combination of probably the way he shot the films, also the way he scored his own movies.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, that's it's amazing. It just it didn't dawn on me till later on at a certain age, just like how you mentioned. And his inspiration, we discussed it before, his inspiration to make films or what he remembers when he was a young man was Cinescope, the old Ben-Hur, Cleopatra movies and so forth, these huge, big productions from MGM or Universal and whatnot. And later on, I started paying attention to other directors like Dario Argento, who did like Suspiria. I can't remember the ones off the top of my head. Or guys like, you know, Brian De Palma, or like, you know, eventually Tarantino, or, you know, God, the Apocalypse Now. I'm drawing blanks on the directors, but I'm filmmakers. But that's, I think that's, you know, it's relatable because I didn't necessarily have that information or knowledge to realize that I was watching films that were made by certain directors, like a James Cameron and so forth.
Yeah.
So when did you start finding a more of an interest on the film aspect of movies?
Man, I was, had to be like 94. Yeah, I was probably 19 at the time. I was like, let me just start making movies. And I guess it was before, you know, obviously you couldn't do it on your phones or anything like that. So I had to borrow my neighbor's camcorder, you know, because I didn't have one. And we would make movies around the neighborhood. And I would edit them on VCR to VCR. I'd go rent a VCR from Blockbuster Video for $10, you know. And they were terrible edits, you know, VCR to VCR. I had this little mixer. It was like $40, $50, $60. I don't remember now, but it would, all it would really do was fade in and fade out. So you can fade in from one VCR to the next. So,
see, but how did you learn how to do that? There was no YouTube, there was no Google, like, hey, I'm gonna learn how to edit from video to VCR. How did you know how to do that? I mean, who showed you that?
I just asked around, I think. At Radio Shack, I'd go to Radio Shack and hit them up. Hey, what cables do I need to do this and this? And that, during that time, they were selling like these big type of machines that were expensive. I forgot the name of them. There were these type machines that would edit, and I couldn't buy that stuff. So I remember buying a tutorial tape from that company and how to do things. And I'm like, well, I can't do that. So let me do the VCR to VCR. And then, you know, you just step it up, you progress, as long as you stick with it. You stick with it over the years, and you learn a lot more and you get better. But in the beginning, it was VCR to VCR.
I had no idea you could edit film from VCR to VCR. I had completely clueless. I had no idea. I mean, I was picturing, like, you know, you as a kid, and I did, you know, I my parents did it years ago. They transferred a bunch of old 8 millimeter film to VHS cassette, and then I think they, from VHS, they did it to like a DVD format.
Same concept.
Okay. But I mean, the resources that people have now at their disposal, you could go on your phone and Google, how do I do this?
Right.
You know, you could watch like some stuff I needed to learn. I just looked at tutorials on YouTube. But when we were young men in the 90s, there was no such thing. Either you would have to go to the library or just ask around, you know.
Right. Exactly.
So when did Michael Santana become a filmmaker? At what age? And do you remember your first movie? And what was it, if you don't mind explaining it?
I don't know if you call me a filmmaker, but I've done a lot of terrible, terrible stuff, video, movie-wise, you know, looking back at the stuff. Real low budget, no budget stuff. Probably 94, 95, me and my two brothers did a little movie called The Rescue, where he ties my other brother up to a gate and I got to go rescue him. And I got some PVC pipe and I painted him red, cut him up, made dynamite. And I strapped dynamite to our gate. And then I spliced in an explosion from the movie Cliffhanger.
It
looked terrible.
I couldn't have done that at all. I wouldn't have figured it out. So you went from being a prop maker, editor, and then, you know, a writer, stuntman. It's just, how old were you when you did this?
Probably 19.
So, okay, we're about the same age. So, okay. But again, I mean, just without the tools that are available nowadays, I mean, it was, even though you're probably not your proudest moment, but you're very resourceful to be your very first film. So,
yeah. So you just kind of progress and stick with it and get better, buy camcorders, you know, you can get a camcorder. And then from there you progress to different cameras, you know, then you get the 1080 cameras and you get the 4K. I mean, you just kind of progress up, you know, and learn from there, you know. So
from that film, what was your first like legit camera that you purchased or rented that it got to a point you're like, okay, I'm going to take these movies a little more serious? It wasn't you weren't taking it serious, but like you just went down a different avenue, like had a more of a professional perspective, look at it, or creative perspective.
Yeah. I got the Canon GL, which it was little mini DV tapes. It was a Canon GL, and that was like a step up from a glorified camcorder, but it wasn't a camcorder. So it was a Canon. And I did some projects on those here and there. And then from there, I got the Panasonic DVX, and that one was special because that filmed at 24 frames per second, which is what you see in movies, cinema, more times than not.
So this kit, the Panasonic was a little more formatted to actually do like cinema, actual film.
Yeah, it was 24 frames, and that's what I loved about it. So I did a lot of stuff with that, and then from there, I got the, and I had these for years before I got a new one. From then I went to the Canon, not the Rebel, it was something 7, I forgot what it was. I can't believe I forgot. But anyways, I did a lot with that one, you know. And then from there I got the Panasonics that I have now. And then I've used various cameras from different friends too who had other cameras.
So what were some of the other early movies prior to Manhattan?
Wow, I did this one called Energy, which is like a little 30-minute short with some friends. Another one called Roads. I mean, they were all terrible, but we got to do it.
What were the concepts behind the two?
Roads was about a hitchhiker who was killing people.
Okay.
Taking their identity. We didn't have the means to make it what it should have been, but Energy was about some friends that were going through some drama and kind of corny shit, but it was, like I said, you have to do that stuff, you know, in my opinion, to learn and learn what not to do. So I did another one called Her, which is about La Llorona, the ghost.
Oh, wow.
Again, you know, no budget, low budget, but we had some cool shots, though. We definitely had some cool night vision shots. And then I did Gray before the other Gray. It was a short, which was a masked man, serial killer type movie, so...
So how much of the older films you took inspiration, the ones prior to Manhattan, the ones prior to the man, Michael Santana, we know now, how much of those older films, those early ones, you took, either revamped or took aspects of them and just kind of pieced together a bigger project?
A few of them, probably Taxi Driver is one. I kind of inspired by that. Energy had a little bit of the actual movie Taxi Driver in it, that one character was trying to become Travis Bickle. And then, I mean, I take a lot of stuff from Michael Mann. I'm very inspired by his shots, the stuff he gets from like Heat. Heat is another one. You know, 1985.
Amazing movie. I think I still have it on VHS. That's how long ago I
badass.
Great movie. It just the scene towards the bank robbery when they have him the shootout with the LAPD. It just,
it's good stuff.
Best. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. I did a music video for a friend of mine called Boot Camp, which we pretty much took the whole beginning of Heat, where De Niro goes and gets the ambulance. Well, this character in Boot Camp goes and gets a U-Haul in the same blue jumpsuit. And I even used some of the score. So that's an ode to Heat, you know?
Great film. Remind me, what other movies has Michael Mann made?
That's the Mohicans, Manhunter, Collateral, Ali, Heat.
Those are some huge movies, man.
Yeah, I mean, just great stuff. Great stuff.
So besides Carpenter and Michael Mann, who are some of the other inspirations or directors or filmmakers that have inspired you to make movies for Manhattan or for yourself?
Scorsese is very inspirational to me. Again, Michael Mann, James Cameron. Who else? Hitchcock, that's my guy.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
Hitchcock, that's probably my favorite between him and Michael Mann. So,
speaking of Scorsese did The Irishman, correct?
Correct.
I had a discussion with someone about that recently. I felt, and they agreed with me, if they would have done a longer miniseries of The Irishman on Netflix, it would have been beyond successful, more than what they did for. I could have seen it like as a maybe a 2-part series over time.
Yeah,
like maybe put a little more depth on it. I'm not saying it wasn't a great piece. It was amazing. Just imagine if they would have done like a mini series of it and just add a little more depth to the, let's say make multiple episodes.
Yeah. And that's what Chris Rock at the Oscars, when he got up on stage, that was one of his jokes to Scorsese, who was in the crowd. He said, "I just watched the first season of The Irishman," which
I didn't know he did that.
Yeah, you're not the only one, brother. I mean, yeah, it was long. It was close to 4 hours. I read the book first. That was interesting. Just depends on what you believe on it. I don't know. It was a good movie.
Great film. I just felt it ended, and I'm like, I wish this would have been maybe a little bit longer. I mean, not a 4-hour film, but let's say, hey, we'll do hour and a half segments of episodes for 6 weeks or whatever. Or you could binge watch and watch the entire thing. But yeah, just great, great film.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies that he did was The Departed. I love this. Amazing flick. It's just, but when you said Heat, I was like, man, that just takes me back to when I was 19 years old, I believe, working at Best Buy, and I bought myself a brand new VCR. It was like a hi-fi DVR with stereo, and one of the first cassettes I bought was Heat, and I believe it was probably the first Terminator.
Do you remember if the Heat that you bought was two tapes, because the widescreen had two tapes, and then the one that wasn't widescreen was just a single tape?
It was the single, so standard format, wasn't widescreen.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
I actually have the widescreen format of The Deer Hunter, and it comes
box.
It's a box set. So the standard format is it's two cassettes.
Yeah.
The wide format, it's a box set, and with commentary and I believe the director's cut.
Yeah, I had that same. I want to say was it like a purpley?
Yeah.
Okay, I had it. I need to get the DVD eventually, I guess, or the Blu-ray. But yeah, great film.
But yeah, I worked at Best Buy, so I was getting these cassettes for, you know, huge discount. And
hell yeah.
But I remember getting a $100 VCR, and then just going to the audio video section and just going through the cassettes and just grabbing what I wanted. And I saw Heat, I grabbed that, I grabbed The Deer Hunter. I mean, these are movies that I watched as a kid, you know, with my dad. My dad would expose me to these movies.
Yeah.
And just didn't realize on like what he was, you know, these moments we're sharing together was going to mold the person I was going to become, you know, this corny scare actor, you know, whatever I am now, a podcaster, and just having this inspiration from movies, TV and film, and just different genres of music as well. It's just, again, I love composers. We talked about recently some of the inspiration for one of your most recent projects. You listened to the score to the movie Seven with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman, correct?
Correct. I listen to a lot of scores. Sleepy Hollow, I'm listening to now.
Oh my God, Danny Elfman. Amazing.
I just drive when I drive. I listen to scores a lot. And as a matter of fact, Peak, I wrote with the Seven score on headphones. Every time I got on the computer, the Gluttony scene, I think, was my go-to on it.
For those who don't know at home, Peak is the latest project that Michael Santana completed. And it is a suspense thriller, suspense horror?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty much about a guy that's killing people and removing their eyeballs and leaving their bodies. This one's going to be a short, but I am writing a full feature length for it. Mm-hmm. And I can't shoot based on, you know, resources that I have. So eventually I'm going to try to pitch it around once I finish everything I want to finish with it, you know. So that's where we're at now. It's almost complete.
I know a few projects that I've came across with people I've spoken to, they will literally shoot a short on you know, the resources they have, and then pitch the full feature film or movie to a bigger production, or they'll shoot a teaser trailer. Hey, this is what we're thinking of doing.
Right.
And then they'll take their concept and take it to the bigger entity that has the larger resources to complete this entire film. So,
yeah, that's what I hope to do with this one, you know.
So let's talk a little bit about Mad Hatter Movies. And when did we start with that? And it just, what was the inspiration? Obviously, we talked about some of your inspirations, but what finally convinced Michael Santana is like, hey, I want to do these movies a little more legit and just actually put a title on it.
Just the love for it, man. You know, if you think about something every day, you know, like, usually when I go to sleep, dude, I'm thinking of a scene, or I'm thinking of what I could do, or when I'm walking around, if I'm going around a corner of the hallway, I'm like using my vision as the camera. So I'll go real close, just weird shit, but I'll just go like real close to the wall. Like, I'm going to do it. So if you start, you know, for me, if you start thinking of these things and that's all you think about mostly, it's time to really jump in, you know, and that's when I did. And that was probably about, I don't know, 04, 05, you know, I was still doing it, you know, I was still doing it, you know, from what I say, 94, I was still doing it in 96, 97, I mean, still going, but I think I really wanted to jump in right around that time and go in and keep going.
What was the first project that you completed officially through Manhattan Movies?
Through Manhattan was Her. That was that La Llorona one I did. Mm-hmm. I think that was the very first one I did with that title.
What was the concept behind Her, if you don't mind me asking?
It was a girl was taken from, we shot at Lake Elsinore. Little girl was camping with her mother and she was taken by the ghost. So this was about her mom and, well, her dad and a couple of guys sent some ghost researchers to go out to the lake and try to just see what happened. You know, that's pretty much what it was about.
How ironic that your first official film through Manhattan was a horror film.
yeah, it was a little paranormal, a little horror.
It's just funny how art imitates life and life imitates art, that you took an inspiration from something else, or like you took the lore of the Weeping, was it the Weeping Lady, the translation of La Llorona, and you created your own concept of it. Going back to when I was a kid, I did this horrible film, and it was a total ripoff of John Carpenter's Halloween. And really? And I even did the POV where Michael, as a kid, puts on the clown mask. I did the same thing, and you saw me reaching into the cabin and grabbing a knife, and it was just this horrible movie. I loved it. I wish I could find the VHS. I had no idea. And the way we edited it, we literally just paused and recorded on the old family style camcorder, like the dinosaur you put on your shoulder.
Yeah.
And if we didn't like something, we would rewind the cassette and just re-record over it. It was a little glitchy sometime, but we had horrible practical effects. Like I literally took the giant size tubes of Christmas wrapping, the cardboard, spray painted silver to make it look like a lead pipe, and you know,
oh yeah, dude.
One of the characters hits like the I guess he's a monster, whatever he was, hits him, the pipe bends, it doesn't affect him, and just horrible practical effects with like someone gets shot and falls in the pool, and my buddy had like a bottle of red food coloring and blood rolls right to the surface of the pool. It's just horrible.
that's awesome, man. I mean, that shows you right there that you're trying to get it done somehow.
It's just horrible. But you were saying how sometimes you're going to bed and these thoughts are just running in your head, or you're at work, or you see a certain image, and it just you have an you see something, and you also have an image in your head of like, hey, this would be a cool scene for a film, or I could picture myself coming down this alley and something happens. I mean, I was in my the house I live in, it's a house converted into boarding homes, apartments pretty much. There's a basement. It's an old Victorian house built in, I don't know, early 1900s. And we talked about this on the phone. I went down to my basement to put something away. And I had an image of one of my characters I played during haunt season sitting in the corner having a conversation with me. But it was my subconscious. Like the character was telling me himself to like, hey, it's time to come out. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not Halloween yet. And like, it's always Halloween or something stupid. But these images are always running in my head. I was listening to the Midnight Syndicate, the composers, as I was going on to do laundry. And so it just was a certain part of the score, and just this vivid image appeared in my head, because I have all my costumes that I've cosplayed or worked on in a big storage tote. And I'm looking at it and it's labeled, you know, it says Creeper Wardrobe or whatever. And then I had an image of the character Greg Diver Joe I play sitting in the corner. And he's sitting there laughing and smiling, and he's talking to me, and I'm talking back to him. And then ultimately, and I think I called you and I said, you know, we're pretty much the same person. And then eventually that character comes out and takes me over. And it just, I do that all day at work. I do it here, or I'm driving down the street. I'm like, you know, that'd be a cool scene to shoot like a movie at this building, or like the sun was setting a certain way in front of my house and the house looked kind of eerie and old. I'm like, I live in a spooky old house. I mean, it just,
Do you write any of this stuff down?
I jot it down in my notepad. You know, I have like, geez, I go crazy. I have about three or four notepads at work. And I think two of them for like work notes, and the rest is creative stuff. And I have a few here as well. Also, I put notes in like on my phone. There's like an electronic notepad. I'll just put quick little notes. But it's crazy how sometimes I just can't turn that off. And just the simplest thing, or like interaction with someone or seeing something, will create this concept. And you never know, that concept might take off a year from now, 5 years from now, maybe tomorrow. Just so you know, we're going to talk about Twisted Christmas. It was just a concept floating around in my head. And then from there, it manifested. But I want to go back to Manhattan Films, but we'll take a quick little break.
Don't you dare try to escape. The Creepcast with Rick Creeper shall return.
Where do you think you're going? There is no escape from the Creepcast with Rick Creeper.
Okay, we're back to episode 8. With my special guest, Michael Santana. He has the coolest name in the world. I can't call him Mike. I can't call him Michael or Mikey. It's got to be Michael Santana, because that's just too cool of a name not to pronounce the entire thing. To me, it's like a waste. He is the creative mind behind 2S Horror Chords podcast, which you can find on various platforms. Also, the video podcast you can find on YouTube. Also, the man behind Manhattan Movies. I will definitely put the links in the description of the podcast where you can find them on Instagram, YouTube, and so forth. So before we jump into your film side, of all your creative projects and aspects. Let's flash back to 2S Horror Quarters podcast. And we talked about the inspiration, how you started it. But you have kind of a cool, little cool history, how you came up with the name, a little homage to your family. How did you come up with 2S Horror Quarters podcast?
That was interesting, actually, because I shot, I think, two or three episodes without a name. I didn't have a name for it. And my uncle passed away in New York, so we went out there to take care of, clean out his apartment, and kind of take care of some things out there. And so I'm in the hallway where you go to everyone's front door. So I'm leaning up against the wall in front of his door, and I'm like just staring at his apartment number, 2S. And that's it. So I go, that's what I'm gonna call it, 2S. I mean, that's what it's gonna be. So on the logo itself, that's actually his buzzer. You know, you hit the buzzer and the square, and that's, he looks through. And that's my son's eye that's kind of looking through there. But that's based on my uncle, his apartment. So
that's very old school. For people who don't know, it's the sight glass at the apartment door, and then also it's the push buzzer to let you know that someone's at the door.
Right.
Yeah, you don't really see a lot of those. That's kind of old school. And the fact that your son's looking through it and you kind of did a little Photoshop on it with a zombie eye, I like that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So that's kind of an ode to my uncle, I guess, forever now. So
there you go. You had a pretty close relationship with your uncle?
We weren't super close, but we talked, you know, we talked a lot. I was into the JFK assassination in high school quite a bit, and I still am. But anyways, long story short, he flew me out there in 93 to Dallas. So because he was working out there, and, you know, we were pretty tight ever since then, you know.
That's cool. Even though you pretty much grew up here on the West Coast, you still have these deep rooted connections to your family back home. And I totally dig that. I'm just, yeah, I mean, you grew up here, but I mean, obviously, yeah, you're embedded back on the East Coast. So that's cool.
Yes, sir.
What turned you on to the shape? Why the fascination? And I can really, what turned you on to him? Was it just his presence? Was it just the character that Carpenter created for the movie Halloween, or is just the way, or like the mystery behind, like what's behind the veil? What's driving this force? Is it the look of the mask? Is it just the whole character in its entirety? What has you so interested in Michael Myers?
The shape, it's a combination of things. First and foremost, it's the world that John Carpenter and everyone involved created, you know. And then Michael, and I got a good friend of mine, Kirk, he summed it up for me one day. He said, to be killed by Michael is to be killed by nothing. You know what I mean? So that dead look on the face of the mask, there's no bargaining with it. You know, whatever's behind it or whoever's behind it really isn't there, really. Right. So the mystery of that, the evil of that, to actually just be killed by nothing, you know, is
terrifying.
It's terrifying, you know. And then the fact that he walks is even scarier, you know, as a child too, just to see, like, damn, they're running and they're hiding, and he's right there somehow, you know what I mean? Halloween 2 is a good example of it, you know. Now you just walked down the center of those hallways at the hospital. You just walk. You know what I mean?
There's something eerie about him. And what I read is Carpenter wanted Michael Myers to be he didn't want him to be a monster. He wanted him to be have more human characteristics.
Sure.
So, you know, hence the whole, when Castle did, you know, the character, obviously, in the first movie, it was just a very stiff posture, hands off to the side, and he's wearing a mask that's pale and motionless, and just the slow stalking, the slow stuff that he's like, I'm gonna get there eventually, and I'm gonna get there before you get there. And just seeing, like, in the scenes, like, where, you know, he's watches someone across the street, or he's seen across the street, where he's standing there watching Annie, you know, when she's in the kitchen, and just and that camera angle where it's, and we talked about this, the camera is focused on Annie and right. Michael's in the back, and it's a little, it's a little blurred, but you see this image of this figure, and it's, yeah, it's a dude, it's a man, but it's like, what's behind that mask? And he's motionless, right. and he just breathes and just very impulsive. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, he has one, just one thing on his mind, is just to consume. Is he killing for pleasure? Is he being driven by like a demonic presence or force? It's just, there's no explanation. So the way I look at Carpenter leaves it up to the viewer, you to come up with a determination of what it means.
Yeah, and you look at this neighborhood, right? The first one, and you're supposed to feel safe. You know, I mean, those type.
Hell of no, it's the creepiest neighborhood.
Right, but it's, I mean, it's not like castles and dungeons, you know what I mean? Just, it's a neighborhood that, you know, and this guy's just stalking everyone, you know, trying to get to you. But it is creepy though, you're right. But
I've been there at night where they, you know, they filmed the movie in Pasadena just to go see the Myers house behind the Sugar Mint. Yeah. And just at night, just walking around by myself, and every 5 minutes I was turning around looking, picturing the shape was going to be there. So, yeah, it just, I always ask people that, and they're like, I like the mask, I like the character he portrays. For me, it went from being completely terrified as a kid to the obsession to, you know, kind of just like reading up on things about him and what Carpenter pretty much did. And in an interview I saw, it was like a 15-minute documentary prior to like the theatrical version I've seen in the theaters. He says he leaves it up to the viewer to determine what Michael is. Because if correct me if I'm wrong, but in the finishing credits, it doesn't say Michael Myers. It says the shape.
You're probably right. I couldn't tell you, but probably yeah.
It says the shape. Yes, the first one. It says the shape, and it says Nick Castle. And then, you know, he's referred to as, you know, Michael Myers, the shape, the boogeyman. So I think the way I look at it, it all pertains to the individual person, how they perceive Michael to be. Is he just
the name, the shape?
Yeah,
that's just
it's creepy.
I mean, just the shape, you know,
lifeless. It's just a creepy mask. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there and get your opinion and share it with the viewers at home. So going back to Manhattan Movies, your very first project was Her, correct?
It's called Her, yeah, if I remember correctly. But yeah, that's as far as being my first one. Yeah, pretty sure it was Her.
What was your second project with Manhattan?
Probably, I want to say Gray, which was a short, like a horror short. And then I'd done a bunch of videos and other things since then. But I remember the one right after that was a horror short. Gray, yep.
The first movie I saw of yours was, and remind me of the title, it's about the playset in the backyard.
Yes, playset. Yeah, that's one of my favorites, actually. Ones I did. One of the ones I'm happy about. You know.
So what was the concept behind playset for the people at home that don't know?
Playset, that's my son's playset in the backyard. And I know when I lock the house up every night, that's one of the things I see, you know. So I'll look out there and like, what if somebody's out there or something's out there watching me lock the house and go to sleep, you know? What can I do with that? You know, so I just built it up where this playset is haunted, be it by something, or maybe it's the actual playset itself has a history. You know, we don't know. But my niece is in it, and she basically disappears inside of this playset. It starts to turn lights off and on its own. You know, she's got lights inside of it. It's kind of creepy, actually. You know, so her mother goes out there, the actress, Kristen Sammons, she goes out there and is looking for her daughter because she just saw her in the playset. So she knows she's right there. She saw her. So she goes closer. She can't find her daughter. And she just saw her, you know. So this playset ends up pulling her back into the slide, and she disappears into the playset. And the end, you know. So I didn't show. And one of the challenges for that was not to show anything. I think that's a little more creepier. And two, there's no budget for that. So you got to get creative.
You leave it up to the imagination, which I love.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, that's one of the ones I'm happy about. And that one there is all sound I flew in, you know. That's not sound from my backyard. You know, that's crisp sound of crickets and footsteps that really bring it to life. You know what I mean? Brings the backyard to life. Because you can't get that, in my opinion, with cars driving by and helicopters. You just can't do it, you know. So I'm a big believer in getting your sound right, especially for horror.
I dig it because there's not a lot of dialogue.
No.
And there's the buildup of, I guess you'd consider like the score or sound effects. There's like that you had like this buildup, this cinematic draw, yeah. while you know, when the mom goes in the back to look for her daughter. And then there's that still shot just of the play set. And you have like, I think it was red lights that lit it up.
Yeah, it turned red, yeah.
And then you leave it up, again, you leave it up to the viewer, their imagination, like, is this thing alive? Is it possessed? Is it a serial killer? Is it the poltergeist that's on a barrel set? You don't know.
You don't know.
And then the mom approaches the play set and she gets sucked in. And then you showed the play set again for maybe, I don't know, another 10, 15 seconds. I don't remember. Then it ends. And it ends so abruptly, you're like, what the F just happened?
Yeah, because it goes back from red back to the regular white inside there on its own. And which I originally was going to go with blue, but Pride Pierce, our DP, he's like, why don't we use red? You know, I'm like, I'm glad you made that choice, man. You know, he lit it up beautifully. And yeah, I'm pretty happy with that one. So.
That one, I admit it, I watched late at night, and then I watched it on my laptop, had my laptop on my chest, and I was like, what the hell did I just watch? That's fucking creepy.
Yeah,
that's his backyard, but just, it was a 1-2 punch within what, I think it was 7 minutes, the whole film?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
About 7-8 minute range, and it was just like, okay, this is creepy play set, the daughter disappears. There's this cinematic buildup, this score, these sound effects. And I dig how you, like I said, the background effects, like in the backyard, the crickets and the, yeah. Just you capture the night would sound in someone's backyard and just in a home, a normal neighbor like you live in.
Yeah. Here's the deal. It's like when I edit this stuff, it's all with headphones on, right? So it's kind of discouraging when I look at it on my phone because you're like, you can't even hear. I mean, it's just not the same. So I prefer, you know, and I kind of suggest everybody watch these things with good sound. Mm-hmm. Or if you watch with good sound, I think. You
know. Yeah, I prefer to watch the movie, like anything you've done, I've always watched on my big screen TV with, you know, the surround system I have with the sound bar and so forth. Because it's shot so crisp and perfect. I want to see it in my big 4K TV or HD, or I watch on my laptop. If I do resort to my phone, I put headphones on.
Okay, cool.
But that one's my favorite. Remind me of the title of the vampire themed film that you did.
Oh, Ynyra.
Yeah.
That, I did that back in 2011, and that was missing something. I felt it should have been more, but that's something I kind of intended to build on. I've written a lot more for it if I ever want to revisit it, but I was cool with it. It could have been a lot better, but that was a good time in my life. You know, I remember shooting that and having all the Halloween stuff outside and Ynyra. Yep.
So it's a female vampire film based around Halloween, correct?
Yeah, it's in this specific short. She is a vampire, but she loves Halloween. So she's not gonna like eat kill these people that night. She's gonna try not to, you know what I mean? You would think maybe she's gonna rub on something else, get blood from something else that night, or whatever the case may be. So you got this punk that's, you know, Halloween bully, whatever. He comes to the door kicking pumpkins and bumping into kids, and he gets what he earned, you know, from her that night, you know.
So she's a vampire that's into Halloween, and people are coming to her door trick-or-treating, and she's giving away candy
because she just loves Halloween, right?
and she has the willpower to keep herself from attacking these people then.
I guess so in this one, yeah, you know.
So it's a vampire that likes Halloween.
that likes Halloween, and she got pissed at this kid. And maybe he came at the wrong time. Maybe she was kind of crazy hungry at that time, you know?
Maybe she was jonesing for some blood. But I like the fact that it's a vampire that likes Halloween. It sounds like my girlfriend, so. That's a cool concept. I seen the film, but I didn't realize that she liked Halloween. I thought it was like it was entrapment. She was trapping people using Halloween as bait. I didn't realize she liked Halloween. That's a pretty cool concept, actually.
It's open for discussion.
That's true. You definitely don't. There's no defined line drawn in the sand. You're right. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So that's good. You know, it's open for discussion.
Didn't think about it. Maybe when you revamp this, or no pun intended, maybe when you revamp this, or you make a new version of it, you know, that could be kind of like the plot behind, who knows, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So your most current project, remind us of the name.
Peak.
And Peak is your suspense thriller?
Yeah, I mean, it's inspired by Seven. It's shot somewhat dark, you know, not too lit up, which I like. And it's pretty much a guy that's pulling out eyeballs. And there's a method to his madness. He's not just picking anyone. You know, it's based on his method is people that have been rude, you know, unkind to people in the world. You know what I mean? Like, for instance, you ever go to a store, hold the door for somebody, and they walk in like you're supposed to hold the door. Don't say thank you. Things of this nature. You know what I mean? So he goes after the people that have been either kind or unkind, rude to him, or maybe people he's seen around town.
So he's definitely there's chaos. There's organization behind his chaos. There's a method to his madness, pretty much.
Yeah, they earned it. You know, in his opinion, they earned it.
Interesting. So it's very malicious. It's thought out. It's intent.
Yeah, exactly.
The trailer is fucking amazing. I just, when I saw it, I'm like, this is Michael Santana. I know this dude. I'm like, look at this. the overhead shot, which you guys didn't know, on the drone, I'm assuming.
James Hill, yeah, that's his drone.
The music that kicks in, and then the scene with, like, you know, the detective, I forget the actor's name. You had him on the podcast before.
Okay.
The patrolman.
Yeah, Dan Wells. He was in Straight Outta Compton and a few other
things. And there's the scene where he's talking to the homicide detective. And then it cuts to the scene, the two patrolmen are going up the stairs and they got their guns drawn. I'm like, man, this is legit. I was like, this is just a trailer? I'm like, wow.
And what was great about that, man, was those two actors, you know, the cops.
Yeah.
They were cops. So they move like officers. They talk like officers.
They're legit. They know what they're doing.
That was what's so great about it, man. It was like, okay, this is what I want you guys to do. Like, you know, a lot of it, they were telling me, no, we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't do that. That's cool. I want to know what you would do and wouldn't do, and let's try to work it out, you know? So,
you had your own, I guess it'd be, you know, when let's say it's a military base movie, they have some type of consultant, like, no, you know, a soldier would hold a rifle like this, or move from room to room like that. Your actors were pretty much telling you, hey, no, we're XPD. We know how we're going to, you know, sweep this room or so forth.
And I think it's a fine line too, because even Dan told me, he was like, I know you got to make it cinematic as well. He goes, because the cops, a day in the life of a cop is boring. That's what he told me. He goes, you'd be bored to death. So, you know, in the way you shoot it and stuff, and the way we're going to approach and go up the stairs is going to be like this, but, you know, let's try to meet in the middle on it. So I was happy with it, you know?
So I like the fact you took actual realism, or, you know, actual procedure, but then at the same time you peppered in a little theater of the mind and turned it into a cinematic, you know, input or cinematic view perspective. So I like the fact that there's realism to it. You actually took what the officers would really do, but at the same time, the creative maker or director is like, oh, I have a perspective as well too. So you have a little bit of both. That is pretty cool. I mean, you had a patrol car, the warehouse.
I had to rent that. The guy's name was Dennis Gar. Nice dude. He was like, what do you tell me? Okay, do you have a permit? And we were on the phone. I'm like, no. He's all, do you got production insurance? I'm like, no. He's all, well, I go, I'll tell you what. Because originally I was going to have both officers drive the car. I go, I'll tell you what, can we do this? I'll pay you what, you know, whatever you want. whatever you're charging for that, we won't get in the car. Like, we won't drive it, we won't touch it. He goes, all right, cool, and that's fine. So when he got there, he let them get in and get out of it, but we didn't drive it, you know. So that was nice of him. He didn't have to do that, you know, because I reached out to this other dude. I forgot his name, but he was a real dickhead, man. real rude on the email about it. Just, you know, okay, whatever. So I kind of reached out to some other people and found Dennis. So
it's just the trailer is amazing, and it's only a trailer, which you eventually want to turn this into a full feature film, correct?
Well, yeah, but I'd want to do it on a someone give me a budget to do it. So the short is almost done. I'm adding a scene, but once it's done, I'm going to send it to you. Check it out.
Sure.
I'm trying to get it done this month, but I got to do a couple of reshoots. But I'm almost there. We're almost there, you know.
So we talked about possibly doing something together. Can we talk about that, or
you want to see it? Cool. No, if you're cool with that.
No, go ahead. You, it's your episode, your podcast. I'm geeking out that you want me involved. I'm like, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah, well, I know I kind of want to touch base and kind of dive into your vampire character. You know, vampire monster character. I'm thinking more of a, and that would be your call as far as who we would be. But I'm picturing a vampire, and I got a nice teaser trailer set up for it, which doesn't, you know, doesn't have to like be married to what the final project will be. You know, it's just right. a teaser. You know, so the idea I had was, you know, your regular dude coming home from work, whatever the case is, and you're sitting down. You have this cool light setup. I saw that you had the orange lights and stuff like that, but we can play with all that. But I wanted to do a nice slow pan towards you. And then just, you would do so the camera would be here, and you would do just a slight turn where we see that something has changed.
So it'd be a shot from behind over a certain shoulder.
Correct.
And when the camera pans in, it'd be a slight head turn where you could see, they'll say, vampire features on the character. Correct. That I'm playing.
Yep. And then we just cut the black. And then from there, that should inspire us to get something else going, you know what I mean? So it's just an idea. It's up to you.
Well, we have a filmmaker. We have a cameraman. The director, writer, / stuntman. You have a monster. And a monster that knows people that does makeup as well. So, we pretty much have all those resources there. So, yeah.
Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. Yes, sir. Besides this vampire short or teaser we talked about, anything you would like to talk about as far as future projects for Manhattan Movies?
Yeah, well, I did So Loaded for Vince last year, last June. I know he wants me to do another video for him. I'm editing another music video right now, currently, actually, for him. I didn't shoot it, but I'm cutting it. I'm doing my documentary on some police officers. Still continuing on with Peak. So there's always something. We got your stuff coming. We got podcasts coming, you know, coming back, hopefully, you know. So
can we talk about a little bit details of the law enforcement documentary you're working on?
Yeah, it's called Division. At least that's the title now. We shot most of it already. It's five officers. So basically, it is the thoughts and stories of black officers on their, you know, their feelings on things, being right in the middle of everything. Hmm. Between people yelling at them for doing their job and then just doing their job, you know? So it's an interesting dynamic.
Hmm.
And it's not shitting on any law enforcement or anything like that. It's division. So we just want to hear honest thoughts, you know? So,
it's going to be the perspective of African-American law enforcement officers. Yep. Is LAPD Orange County?
Yeah, we have I think three LAPD.
Oh, wow.
And then we have two former San Bernardino, I think.
Wow, so, two heavy areas.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that one. I mean, that's just very respectful. And they walk a fine line. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. From being called sellouts to, man, I'm just trying to protect the community. I mean, it's crazy, you know.
Yeah,
so
you're just trying to do your job or give back to the community, you know. Anything else in the future of Manhattan Movies?
I'd like to do more podcasts, obviously. Continue on with Peak. Get into your project.
Cool.
Yeah, always something, man. Let's just keep working, you know?
So, random question. Name your top three directors and why. Directors, filmmakers.
Okay. In no specific order.
No specific order.
I would go Hitchcock. Because of, well, Psycho is very inspirational to me, but because of what he does with such a still camera, to me, that's kind of, you gotta be pretty creative to do things within that, you know, and the actors and everybody else involved, obviously, but just what he does with that, his characters and then for him to always have a cameo in his pictures,
right?
Without, you know, the perfect timing, though. You can't throw him in there too early or too late, because then you're like, oh, forget about the story, that's Hitchcock. So it's all timing, you know.
Very subtle, his cameos. Like it wasn't like something you would expect to happen at that moment. It just kind of popped up. You're like, oh, there's Hitchcock, okay. But it didn't take you away from the actual film.
Exactly. And I'll take this quote from, well, paraphrase from Carpenter. John Carpenter said about Psycho, was it was one of the first ones back then, it came out in 1960, that brought monsters out of castles and stuff. It brought it to a hotel that I would go stay the night at. You know what I mean?
I remember that quote.
My parents would go stay at, you know what I mean? And I'm like, well, that's true. You know, so Hitchcock is one. Scorsese is another inspirational guy, because his feel for New York City, his shots, his gritty, you know, Mean Streets, Taxi Driver, just the grittiness of 70s, 80s New York, Raging Bull.
Great.
Right? I mean,
we could talk about another hour just his movies alone. I mean,
yeah. And so I'm really into Scorsese. And then Michael Mann. Michael Mann, to me, he shoots the night so beautifully. Him and his DP, whoever that is, I don't know who that is, but just the way he shoots the nighttime is so beautiful, and the way he has layers for his characters, which I take that from Michael Mann too. Now I'll make bios for my characters. You know what I mean? You used to live here, you know, and
you're doing backstories for your players, pretty much.
Yep, I did that for the last few of them, and I did that for Pete. You like this type of food, or you go here. I mean, it's layers. It helps you. You know what I mean? And in Peak, there's two officers that have had a bad history, and you see that play out in Peak. It doesn't necessarily pertain to the story of what's happening with the murders, but it's another layer instead of an actor just walking in and, okay, these are my lines.
So like your characters have depth to them. You're creating personalities.
Yeah. And I say, here, start with this, and then you guys build how you want to build. You know?
I like the fact that you created the contrast between the two officers, where they have bad history, you said?
They have a little rough patch. Pretty much one detective proved another detective wrong in a case, and he didn't like that, you know, so he can't get over it. So
that's cool.
And, you know, you'll see it on the short.
I like that, because it manifests in the film, obviously. So
yeah.
Besides the main theme of the movie, there is being killer with a certain intentions, you have each character has his own backstory, and it's going to manifest on the film somehow. So to me, when you do something like that, you're investing time into the individual characters, where your viewers or your audience goers are going to, they might be engulfed into that. See what I'm saying? So you're creating, to me, I hate to use the word immersion, but you're creating more interest. So you're like, wow, you know, I can relate to this character. I didn't realize that. Someone might not see that interaction, but someone who's really into details of a film will see the relationship that the two officers have,
right?
And on top of the interest of the topic of the movie, that's pretty cool. I didn't realize Michael Mann was doing that with his movies.
Yeah, man. Like for an example, would be in Collateral with Jada Pinkett. He had her hang out with a couple that would have been her parents, her character's parents. Incredible. I mean, to me, I geek out on that stuff. I mean, De Niro. Somebody was saying, it might have been Scorsese, somebody, I was watching a behind the scenes of some movie, and they said De Niro could have a conversation for 2 hours about the way a character would tie his shoes. to me is just, it's, you need that. You
know? That's crazy.
You know, good stuff.
I saw some, I think it was like back behind the scene footage of Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula, excuse me. And what he did is, obviously they do the table reads and all the characters come in, all the actors. He would have them interact with one another. He would have them, you know, dance like the way that they, you know, the traditional style of dance they did in, during that period. He would make them eat dinner in character, interact with each other at a formal dinner setting or individual conversations. Sure. So he would develop relationships amongst, you know, the players, but also he did develop backstories to each individual character. Obviously, he was able to develop, have development on characters based on the novel, but yeah. What he did was he developed kinship or bondship amongst the actors. And I didn't know, I was like, that's pretty cool. And it was just them, you know, dining together in character, dancing together, holding conversations, walking together. So he was creating depth.
Yeah.
And that will translate to the film. And you saw it on the film, which is, that is just, that's a trip, man.
Vital, you know, like the cafe scene in Heat. Pacino wanted to rehearse. De Niro said, no, we shouldn't, because our characters never met until this cafe scene, right? Well, when he pulled them over on the freeway. So they didn't rehearse it, you know? And I think they did, I don't know, 20-something takes. They used take 11 on both cameras, because each take, according to Michael Mann, each take has its own dynamic. He's right. So he didn't want to take 9 and then the reverse take 11. So they used everything they pulled from take 11.
Interesting. You told me a fact about that interaction of Pacino and De Niro in that scene that they filmed this so many times. I think you were telling me that to a point one of them was getting frustrated with the other, and that emotion came out during the scene as he played that character. Was it you that told me that? That there were so many damn takes that they finally got fed up with one another, and translated on film. I'm not thinking of another movie.
Because that, I don't think that was the case for the cafe scene in Heat, unless I'm mistaken. But
it might have been something. It might have been another conversation we had. So
that does.
So those are your top three directors, then, huh?
Yeah. That I can think of right now would be Michael Mann, Hitchcock, and Scorsese. I love Spielberg. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. So I know I every guest I have on, I have like this kind of what if question.
Okay.
So we're here. Obviously, we're not together. You're at home and I'm at home. A portal opens up right there in your studio. You have an opportunity to go work with any director. Either just sit in, work with them, or just be like a key grip on any film. What director or what film would you, any era, any genre, any era, doesn't matter. What movie, film, or director would you work with, or on what I'm going to try to say is, what director would you work with, or what film would you go back and experience?
It would be Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho.
I knew you were going to say that.
I have a 8x10 picture of somewhere of him talking to Janet Leigh, or Janet Leigh when she's in the shower scene. Mm-hmm. I would love to have been there for that. For everything, actually, you know, just to be over there on Universal. It would be Hitchcock on that, you know.
Would you just want to be in the background, just experiences? Or would you want to actually work on the film?
I'd want to stand next to him, you know. If he didn't want me to say anything, that's cool, you know, because I would probably screwed up the movie if he took any of my suggestions. I would just want to pretty much shadow him. Go eat with him, go sit with him, you know, and then go to set with him, you know, just.
Interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
I heard he was a tyrant on the set, and he purposely treated the cast a certain way just so he could get raw emotion out of them.
Yeah, I heard that too. maybe, you know, he might have been a dick. I don't know. It would have been great to learn from him.
Well, I had a feeling you were going to say Psycho, and very interesting. I think that's it. Got a lot of information about you, and
appreciate
looking forward to see Peak. I'm looking forward to the podcast to come back. Any future guests for the podcast? Hopefully things will lighten up. We could go back to doing things normally, or you're going to do a video podcast the way we're doing it now, or?
Yeah, I'd rather not. I want to get, you know, Krista and Emmanuel here, because we've been planning that.
Right.
I'd like to get them here. I want to reach out to a few other people that have wanted to come on. You know, I'd rather do it here. I just would rather do it. But I guess it seems like it's okay if we can make it work. You know,
it's okay. It's not my choice. I'd rather have you here in studio. Yeah. I totally understand. For those that don't know, and I mentioned it before we sign out, when I did my event, the Twisted Christmas, the Immersive Cinema Experience, Michael Santana actually did on his own, didn't ask him, just surprised me, did the two trailers that I used to advertise the event on social media. And it just blew my mind. I was mind blown by the first one. And then the second one, just everyone was just like, everyone I worked with at the Haunts, the Sinister Point and Dark Harbor and my friends, I'm there like, where are you getting these fucking trailers from? I'm like,
is that right?
Yeah, they were like, we're talking like management, like people that have been in the industry, the haunt industry for 15, 20 years. They're like, who's doing these trailers for you? I said, well, you need to talk to that man right there, Michael Santana. I got nothing to do with this. But that second one with the font and the music and the blood splatters and just, I love it. I watch it occasionally just to kind of go back and I'll just like the day of, I had that playing in my head and I kept posting that video every other day, weeks at a time. And I remember I'm all the events here and I posted it and everyone kept telling me the buildup that you created. I'm like, well, yes, I could post and put whatever the hell I want, copy and paste. But if I had nothing to back that, if I had no buildup of a decent trailer, a film or of a teaser, then there's nothing that I could have done with. There's nothing I could have done unless I had that. So,
yeah, I believed in what you were doing. And I just felt that, you know, let's put it out there. I did one. I go, I'm going to make another one. You know what I mean? Let's do another one, you know?
So, well, I appreciate it. It was so much fun. It was stressful, but the hard work from people like yourself and made it all worthwhile. So I just want to thank you for coming on the podcast finally.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to us working on stuff. I'm looking forward to the final outcome of Peak. Again, I'm here with Michael Santana, the man behind 2S Horror Quarters Podcast and Man That Had a Movies. You can find him on Instagram. You can find him on YouTube, and I'll definitely put the links to his description. You've not only been a friend, but you've been an inspiration as well. I think you're one of the reasons why I actually started the Creepcast podcast. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, man, thank you. I appreciate those kind words, brother.
So hopefully soon, you know, our anniversary just came up recently. You know,
yeah. Right? Isn't that crazy?
It's been a year. So it's been a year. For those that don't know at home, we never met. Mm-hmm. Me and Mr. Santana never met. And through just mutual acquaintances, I went on his podcast, just drove out to his area, and we geeked out for what, 2 hours?
Yeah, we geeked out for 2 hours. You brought me a gift, Hudson and Hicks.
Yeah, they're still there.
Back there. And so that was great.
And then what'd you think of it, the original It on the TV series?
You know what? It was, looking at it now, it was cheesy, some of the effects, but I loved it, man.
They made that on for ABC, for network TV.
Yeah, it was like, what, two or three episodes, right? It wasn't just one run, right?
I believe it was three back-to-back episodes. To me, if they would have made that a big blockbuster movie back in the 90s, that's why I'm torn between, and this is, God, I could go on for another hour. I'm torn between the original It that was made for TV and the It that was made for cinema. It's like, people compare the two. I'm like, well, you can't compare the two.
You can't. It's not a fair comparison.
It's not a fair comparison. Now, if Universal or let's say MGM or whoever would have made the It back in the 91, 92, for an actual film for theaters, then that's another story.
Yeah, that It and then Salem's Lot.
You know, oh, my God.
The TV one.
Creepy as hell.
That scared me as a kid, bro.
It still does. It's still. I listen to the score all the time. That eerie.
Really? I have not. I got to punch that up.
Yeah, I have it on my, I think, Google Play or even on like Amazon or whatever. Salem's but, me personally, I like Tim Curry better as It, so that's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, he was scared for sure.
Alrighty, sir. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for being a good friend and helping me out with Twisted Christmas. I'm looking forward to our future projects.
Yes, sir.
You're very inspirational. Very creative. I love everything you do.
Thank you, sir.
I'm looking forward to more episodes of the podcast. I'm looking forward to more movies and just hanging out. You know, go back to Zombie Donuts or something.
Get a Coke Zero. Man. Yes, let's do that.
Because you, I drink Coke Zero now. You know, it's like.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's good stuff, right?
Michael Santana drinks Coke Zero. Coffee, water, and Coke Zero. So, I mean, I don't drink soda, but occasionally I want that fix, and I drink a Coke Zero. So.
Water?
Coke Zero and coffee.
There it is.
That's what he's showing me on camera right now. So.
Man, I appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
No worries. All right, guys. That was episode 8 with Michael Santana from 2S Horror Quarters Podcast and Manhattan Movies. I think we're going to call it a night. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you.
Talk to you soon, man.
You've once again barely escaped the clutches of the Creepcast with Rick Creeper. Next time, you may not be so lucky. To find out more about the Creepcast and Rick Creeper, follow Rick on Instagram at RickCreeper11. Until next time, be sure to keep that lantern light burning.